The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show, where, of course, even though last week we delayed our episode to literally the end of the week to record, naturally, Sony still found a way to publish news after we recorded. So we'll be catching up on that and plenty more this week. But I'm joined, before we get into all of that, by Brian Altana.
Beyond.
And Tom Marks.
Hello.
Tom, thank you for being here. Of course, we're going to be talking about a game, Tom, that you recently reviewed. So we'll be jumping into that. And I think there's probably no better place to start than to catch up on the PlayStation Plus news that, of course, dropped after our late episode last week, which, by the way, if you happen to have not seen or listened to the episode, it went up a little later to catch up on the state of play reactions. So definitely go check that out if you haven't already. But yes, they're currently available. The PlayStation Plus March lineup is revealed. In addition to all this, I do want to say, if you're a PlayStation Plus member, one, and you don't have a PS5, still make sure to redeem every game because you can then use those games later on your PS5 when you eventually get one. So you can still download Destruction All-Stars. So just go check that. They've already announced new modes and things. I'm excited to see where that goes. But for now, there are four new games or four games added to PlayStation Plus for this month. The first one we'll start with is a brand new game, Maquette. This is published by Annapurna, who Tom and I often talk about how they seem to just not be able to do any wrong and putting out a consistent slew of good to incredible games. And so Maquette is a brand new puzzle game that is essentially uses, I don't want to spoil too much, but it essentially uses size of the world in very interesting ways to force you to solve a puzzle, both that is happening around you and that you can see on a maquette on the tables. You can see in the footage that you can look at if you're watching the video version of the show. But Tom, you reviewed it, so rather than preamble about my experience too much, I do want to touch on your review. So if you want to sort of give us just like your overall like top level thoughts on Maquette, how did the game settle for you?
Yeah, so I gave it a 7 out of 10, which is good. I thought it was a very good puzzle game that sort of didn't really make the most of what I think is a very, very, very clever idea. I guess getting it out of the way, I'm super glad this game is on PS Plus because it makes it incredibly easy to recommend to everybody who has PS Plus. It's absolutely a game you should download on there and try. It only took me like 2.5 hours to beat, but also, and I there's no way for me to say this without sounding very braggy, but like I beat puzzle games really quickly. Like it is just a thing I know about myself. Like, so probably it's more in the 3 to 4 hour range for anybody who is not like weird like me, who just like blows through puzzle games. I don't know why that happens to me, but it's like, it's very odd.
You're allowed to be good at puzzle games. That's okay. You don't brag about that.
It's that. It's yeah. Puzzle.
That's a good thing to brag about. I feel like nobody can brag about stuff that they're good at anymore because people are just like, he's bragging or he's humble bragging. Like, no, he's proud of the fact that he's good at that.
I've genuinely considered putting it in reviews before just to like temper people's expectations, but there's no way to do that without sounding like a jerk. But like, like for example, I reviewed this game Obduction, which was the new game, the game from Cyan Worlds, the people who made Myst and Rand Miller. And I, in my review, was like, yeah, the game was pretty easy. Like, I didn't really know what the deal was. And then like every other review when the embargo went up was like, this game is way too hard. And I was like, oh no. So who knows? But yeah, it's a really, really cool game. It's got a very incredible art style. Like, it is just gorgeous to look at. But my main sort of problem with it, and this didn't ruin the game by any means, but it just sort of like didn't really push the envelope of its own ideas very often. Like, I think a really good way to put it is, you know how in a lot of puzzle games, it'll like give you an introductory puzzle to sort of like explain a concept, and then the next puzzle will be like expanding on that concept a little bit, and then a little later on it'll give you that concept but like harder, and it sort of steps things up slowly. This feels like all the puzzles are maybe only like the first or second step of that process, and then it moves on, right? Like, it they're not bad by any means, they're just sort of like, they're just a little bit sort of unambitious for what is otherwise a pretty ambitious concept. And that was just sort of a little disappointing to see, but it's still fun. It's still very beautiful and very fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. Cause I think there's a lot of puzzle games that sort of, for lack of better words, they sort of build upon their own language,
right?
Which is like, they kind of teach you a vernacular. And as you evolve towards the end, it's like, if you forgot the lessons of here, like, you might not be good at this over here. Like, something I think that The Witness was like pretty smart about building upon was, you know, you couldn't really just skip a bunch of areas in that game and know what you were doing. Like, you had to pretty much ramp up along with the evolution of it. So that is interesting.
And in The Witness, the really cool thing about The Witness that I love is that if you learned that language and you knew that language and you started the game from scratch, you could go anywhere, right? Because you already know it. And yeah, Maquette just doesn't really have that freedom, and it puts more of an emphasis on story, but the story I thought was like cute and well acted, but sort of, it's a story of a relationship that I could only describe as basic, right? Like, it's just like very simple, and that's kind of it.
I know what you mean. So I've played, I want to say, about maybe like 80% of it so far. I'm almost done. It was one of those things where I did get stuck on a puzzle or two, and I just had to like walk away last night. So I'm going to probably come back to it tonight, solve it in 5 seconds, be pissed at myself that I couldn't get it yesterday, and then move on. But reading over your review and everything, I pretty much agree with all those points. Like, I think totally, with it being on PlayStation Plus, go check this game out. Like, there is no reason not to. It is really fun. And I think what does work there does work really well. But you're right that it kind of introduces these ideas, and then rather than luxuriating in them or testing your strength with them, after about 20 minutes, it's on to the next thing. Like, there's a late game, without spoiling too much, there's a late game puzzle that uses somewhat of a Tetris block setup, and I don't want to spoil too much else, but Tommy, you probably know which one I mean.
Yeah.
That uses an interesting, like, Tetris mechanic, but it's the first time it's introduced in the game, and then it I doubt it's going to be reused again, but I would have played probably like 4 or 5 more of those puzzles to get in the hang of it, and I wanted more. Like, it left me in that space of, I want to see each of these puzzles. But yeah, like, as you said, the journey so far is really, it's a beautiful game. The puzzle ideas that are there are really cool. I really like the soundtrack selections. Like, I don't know where these songs are from. I hope there are listings in the credits so I can go download them later.
There are.
Okay, good. But they work really well as like rom-com soundtrack, the video game.
Yeah, it definitely has that vibe. It uses licensed music in a way that I haven't seen a lot of other games do.
Yeah, it made me go like, oh yeah, I wouldn't mind if just like a poppy rock song appeared in a game one time, because like, this is nice and it's pleasant in a fun way. But yeah, I agree with you in terms of the story. I think it is well acted. It has Bryce Dallas Howard, and she does a really great job in it. But it almost feels like everything the characters say is meant to be as simple as possible so that it remains relatable. But by doing so, it lacks the specificity to make it feel real.
Yeah, that's not a bad way of putting it.
Like, the problems they seem to encounter are like the problems of like rom-com 101 almost to me.
Right.
And like you said, it's well acted. Like, I think they convey it well. I think the way it's introduced in the world works, but yeah, it's kind of like, there's nothing in that story that I could not have told you probably from minute one would happen.
Right.
As it goes through.
And again, this is a lot of criticism, but I think it's partly for me, the reason I came down pretty critical on it was like, I was really excited for the idea. Right. Like, the concept is so good of this like recursive world. It's just so cool. And then also, it's just sort of a tricky thing when it's like, well, if you want this similar story but better, you could probably go play Florence. If you want like a similar recursive idea with more interesting puzzles, you could probably go play Manifold Garden. If you want like this similar art style and presentation, you could probably just go play The Witness. And like, so it's in this weird sort of odd duck of a space for me where it's like, I definitely would recommend it, but I'd probably recommend a lot of other things first. And that doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it doesn't really like there's it's not doing a lot that like blew me away in the way that some of those other games I just listed did. And the fact that it's on PS Plus for free makes it a really, really easy way to then say, oh, yeah, you should just go play this because it's cool.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I definitely recommend it too with your arm right there. Like I do think it is, especially as a PlayStation Plus game, there's no reason to not go check this out, especially if you have any inclination toward puzzle games. Like I do think it's really I've had a really fun time with it. But yeah, I'm very much with you there, Tom, in terms of like it has left me wanting more, not just in the sense of like, ooh, I can't wait to see what Maquette 2 is about, but like in terms of I wish there was more meat to it because the foundation is solid. It just doesn't do enough with that within the context of this single game. But as you said, like it's a relatively short experience. If you have PlayStation Plus, I don't think there's any reason not to jump into it. I've seen a lot of people fall like head over heels in love with sort of the storytelling of it. So it may hit you a bit more passionately than it has Tom and I, but definitely, I think a good one to look out for this month. In addition to that, I wanted to bring up this one next. Final Fantasy VII Remake is free to download on the PS4 version, but it comes with a bit of an asterisk. So if you have Final Fantasy VII Remake on PS4 currently, if you bought it before it was on PlayStation Plus, you're entitled to a free PS5 upgrade of the game when it comes out later this year on June 10th, I believe. If you get the game through PlayStation Plus, you are not entitled to the PS5 upgrade for Final Fantasy VII Remake and will have to buy the full game on PS5 to play it on PS5 in the new version. You can play it backward compatible, of course, but to play the PS5 version, which is also the only place to play the Yuffie DLC story that they're adding, is only in the PS5 version. So you essentially get Final Fantasy VII Remake, but if you want to see it keep going, you'll have to rebuy it on PS5 if you're getting it through PlayStation Plus.
And I think if you get the free PS4 to PS5 upgrade, you still have to buy the Yuffie DLC separately.
Yes.
Like another thing.
And so it's worth pointing out before we get too far into this, because I think there's a lot of like ifs and whats, and we'll see, because, you know, we're 4 or 5 months out from this. They have not announced a separate price point for the Yuffie DLC, so we don't know what that will cost people who have the game at this point right now. It could be any, you know, like it could be $20, it could be $40. I have no idea. But additionally, they haven't stated whether or not there will be like a discounted upgrade price for these PS4 these PlayStation Plus owners, which if they're going to pull this, I think is the most respectful thing to do. If you're going to charge any money, at least charge a discount. But yeah, it's a strange place. Brian, what are your sort of like general thoughts on the?
Well, we were joking earlier about like news getting announced after the State of Play and between when Beyond recorded last week. There's a specific and strategic justification behind that. And that's because this is an incredibly convoluted, wordy mouthful to explain to people who had just seen a trailer the day before for the free upgrade path from the PS4 to PS5 versions of Final Fantasy VII. Like, this is a really cool thing that they gave this big, big AAA game out for free, or air quotes free, as part of the PlayStation Plus. But not having that path is definitely like a difficult thing to parse the reasoning behind, especially fresh off of the announcement that, like, you know, we're celebrating this game again. It's getting new content. It's getting an upgrade, blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm not crazy about this, honestly. Like, it feels weird, like looking a gift horse in the mouth on this one, or I guess paying a monthly subscription horse. but it doesn't feel like this is the like super cool of them, honestly. Like, it feels a little crappy. Like, it's a little bit, there's a little bit of like, that's kind of gross. Like, you could have flipped the switch and just been like, hey, play it now. When you get a PS5, you can upgrade for free. But instead they were like, you have a weird version of it that doesn't really exist anywhere else. Enjoy, air quotes.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you at all. But the thing I thought was so funny after the Yuffie and Intergrade DLC stuff announcement at all was like, people on Reddit were like, sort of in this weird zone of being like, well, honestly, I'd expect, like, what I'd expect from Square is that they just make us rebuy the entire game to play Yuffie at all. So the fact that we can even buy it separately in any way is sort of an improvement for them. And it was like, you know, like, and it's not good, but it's also like less bad than usual.
Yeah
it's sort a little of the Stockholm syndrome there.
it's a bit of a conversation that's happened, I think, around Persona, where, you know, to play the Royal content for Persona 5 Royal, you have to buy that version of the game. Like, anyone who owns Persona 5 can't just buy that content separately,
right?
It's a different situation, but in terms of a, like, yeah, I saw a little bit of that of people, and you know, like, full disclosure, I obviously, as someone who's played the Kingdom Hearts series a lot, I have bought remaster collections multiple times on multiple platforms. So, like, am I a bit of a hypocrite for knocking this? Probably a little bit. But it felt strange in the way of, like, Brian, I totally think you're right that they very clearly wanted to bury this bit of the news the day after, and this is why they didn't mention it in the state of play.
Right.
But I did see a few people defending it as, like, well, you know, they just want to, like, if all these people didn't buy or aren't going to buy the PlayStation 5 version, like, they could be losing out on money and sales. So it just makes sense that they'd want to get these people to buy it. I guess my counter argument would be, like, if they haven't bought Final Fantasy VII Remake by now, they probably weren't going to, and giving them a free version that might incite them to buy DLC is probably the best case scenario you could hope for.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think with it, this is a difficult one, right? Because it's like, yeah. I know specifically a lot of people who are like, I'm going to wait until this game is done to play it. And that, I mean, obviously that could be 5, 10, 50 years away. But the other thing too is, like, there's the convenience of PlayStation Plus that brings you to play games that you might not have played otherwise. It's what we were talking about a minute ago with Maquette. It's like, this is exactly why this game is perfect for me, because I wouldn't have been on my radar. I would have been on mine because I'm weird. But I think, like, for the general populace, like, they would be like, I don't know about this. But this is like a game where, you know, maybe this wasn't necessarily on people's radars, or maybe there's a lot of casual subscribers. There's millions and millions of people on PS Plus, millions. And maybe some of them go, oh, Final Fantasy, I remember that when I was 10, or, you know, I heard about this, or I just saw this in the state of play 2 days ago. I'm a hardcore gamer who also didn't know this game came out a year ago. We're creating a lot of hologram people here. But you could actually watch the sort of ebb and flow of the reactions to this in real time on social media when this announcement happened, because people were like, oh my God, this is awesome. It's free now. And they just announced the other day that if anybody who has this game gets the upgrade, and now I'll have this game. And then, like, 5 minutes later, they'd, like, you know, thread tweet and be like, ah, no, I won't. this sucks. But it's still cool. It's still a huge, huge title. But I do understand that there is, it's a little cloudy, the messaging there, and, you know, it is what it is. What can you do?
It feels like one of the dying breath remnants of the distinction between generations, right?
Yeah.
It's like, no, we're only giving you the PS4 version of this game and it doesn't upgrade. It's such a, like, I'm so excited for a year from now when we just don't have to deal with that anymore. It's just all that stuff is going to go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the red tape behind, like, cross-gen upgrades, and admittedly some of it is caused on Sony's part when it comes to cross-gens or to cross platform stuff, because, you know, Xbox has the I forget the name for their service, but the essentially the, like, overall thing that let them just have upgrades, you know, from last gen to current gen. I'm blanking on the name for what that service is called, forgive me.
Games and cross-play, games anywhere, I don't know,
it's all buzzword garbage. Yeah, it's somewhere there, but they had that, whereas on PS5 it's been more case by case. It's just, yep, like, it's so much
smart
weird.
Delivery, was that what they were called?
Smart delivery, that's, yeah, you know, buzzword garbage,
two we got there put together.
You are good at puzzles.
Oh God. What's that service name is just the worst puzzle I'd never want to play. But yeah, all of that has only, I think, added more frustration. And Tom, I think you're right. Like, a year or two from now, when we don't have to think about these things, the game is just available, and that will work. That will be nice. But, as we were saying, like, the asterisks aside, it is a huge game to have. And so if you haven't played Final Fantasy VII Remake and you have a PlayStation 4, you should probably go check out Final Fantasy VII Remake, 'cause it's a very pretty game.
Yeah. And honestly, really great game. to be fair and to sort of like read the larger room, I don't think there's been like an outreach or a backlash against this, nor maybe should there be. Like, I thought like with the scenario with Control, like that felt a little bit more like you're kind of you're screwing over your like most dedicated, devoted fan base here, and they kind of reneged it, right, and fixed it in some ways. And I haven't really seen that here. So for all intents, like I think this is the way it's going to be, and that's, you know, what can we do? Yeah,
everyone who has purchased it already will be getting that free upgrade. And so, like, my best advice would probably be like, if you happen to see it, like if you claim it through PS Plus and you happen to see it for like $20 on the PSN, probably just buy it there, and then you'll get the, you know, cheaper PS5 version.
Yep.
If it allows you to do that. I don't know if there's weird red tape in the background.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
But anyway, moving on from that, the third game in the lineup is Farpoint, a PSVR game, which I am personally happy that there are PSVR games in the lineup. I think we've called for that on the show quite a bit that, like, one, there should be VR games in the lineup for the people who, you know, have PSVR, because obviously it's a very dedicated audience. But also for people who don't have PSVR, if you suddenly have a backlog of 15 VR games that you could play for free because you had PlayStation Plus and you see a PSVR headset on sale, you're probably more inclined to go buy one. Mm-hmm. So I think adding a game like this that was pretty prominent, I've actually not played Farpoint. So if either of you have more experience with it,
I have. Yeah.
How did you feel about it? Because I think I've heard some mixed things.
So, yeah, I don't think it's like it's one of those things where I think it would have been way less interesting as just a sci-fi FPS game in non-VR. VR makes it a lot more interesting, like it does with many sort of banal, mundane, or even just, you know, kind of overwrought things, is like turning, you know, opening a notebook in VR is more interesting than doing it with the A button when you're playing the video game. This is one of the larger tier, bigger budget PSVR games. This is the one that sort of went hand in hand with the controller that I'm already forgetting the name of. The smart delivery controller. This is super cool to see this here. This is like, if you didn't know about this game or you slept on it because you have a PSVR and you went for like some of the more like known franchises and stuff like that, this is a super fun, like, it kind of older school like a first person shooter with just like some giant, awful exploding spiders in it and like interesting environments and stuff like that. The controls work really well. I dig this one. Yeah. It didn't win a ton of awards or anything like that. I don't think it's going to like reinvent VR shooting or anything, but it has a lot of really cool stuff. And if you have a PSVR or you're thinking of getting one, add this to your library.
Absolutely. And then the last one on the list is for PS4, but I believe it's backward compatible. But this is a Remnant from the Ashes, which is a third person shooter. Am I wrong? Is this one of the Souls likes that like we have talked about on the show before? OK, because I'm all on Red. Our producer and I have talked about this off the show, but like I'm fully on the Soulsborne train. So like I kind of am looking for some other Souls like. So have you both have had experience with this one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How is it?
It's fun. It's fun. Let me start that over. It's fun.
It is.
Yeah, it's basically Dark Souls with guns, with a little bit more of an emphasis on up to 3-player co-op, gotcha. Sort of from the get-go, rather than Dark Souls' weird sort of it's co-op, but you've got to jump through some hoops to get to co-op sort of stuff. It's cool. It's a very like weird, there's weird guns. It's got a really weird, gross sort of art style in a good way. The only thing that it kind of, I think, lacks from the Souls formula is that its worlds are randomly generated the first time you start a run. And then you can reset your world. Like your world will be set from the moment you generate the game you're playing. And it's not like a short game. It's not like a 1-hour roguelike or anything. But basically it means you can infinitely replay the game and it will be different bosses, a different order of rooms, different stuff like that. And the one thing that does sell it short from other Souls likes is that you don't have this sort of handcrafted, very intricately designed world to explore and go through, but it's also just sort of doing something different from Souls likes. That's not necessarily like a objectively worse part of it.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Tom's saying. I think that was a big issue for me. Was the sort of I will always appreciate a deliberate, individually well-crafted world over infinite opportunities. That said, I think the way the algorithm works and the way it procedurally generates levels in this game mostly works. Like it actually creates it. Stitches together a bunch of sort of same-ish environments with some unique ones and threads you through some kind of cool needles. I actually really, really like this game. I don't know if it just hit at the right time or like I got it through Game Pass, which is just like getting it through PlayStation Plus, in that like you're like, I didn't really know I was gonna, you know, I didn't think about this game. I'm kind of like running through a bunch of Souls likes at the time and trying to find one that would really click. And this one, like the emphasis on guns in this game really does add a unique dynamic for me personally. Like I thought that was really cool. And like, I don't really play like Bloodborne and Dark Souls and stuff like that, like projectile based. Like I there isn't really a ton of that in Bloodborne, but I'm mostly like, you know, up in your face, like Drunken Master style. And this is like very like, I want to hang back and pick off crowds and stuff like that. I think there's a lot of super cool bosses in this game that are like legitimately tough,
That one sucks. There are a couple. Dude. This is one of the main, because I agree. I think it's a really, really fun game. And especially on PS Plus, you should absolutely pick it up and play it co-op with some friends. But no, there are some bosses that you won't hit and will make you want to walk away from it completely forever. Like,
yeah, if you listen to the show and you didn't see what we're just like, there's this awful dragon garbage on a bridge and you have to fight and I hate him. The last boss of this game sucks. Sucks. I hate saying that.
Sounds like the Dark Souls butterfly boss. I forget her. I always call her Madame Butterfly, but yeah, that sounds like her.
I didn't even beat this game. I got to the final boss and then I thought that the final boss was so frustrating that I was just like, you know what? I don't have anything to prove to myself and I don't want to go back and like grind just to beat this boss. So like, I'm good. And I just stopped. Like
you mentioned the co-op thing and I was like, yeah, that's cute. I don't play. I want to be alone when I play Souls likes, you know? leave me alone in the dark, you know, and I'll have a couple of drinks and be scared and fight bad guys. I don't want to like, you know, squad up with friends and be like, oh, we're in Yharnam where we drop him. Like I'm good for that. This is like, I want to play these games alone. And I got to the end of this game and every like wiki and FAQ is basically just like, well, you got to bring like four or five like high level friends with you. And I was like, no. I'm at the finish line. I don't want to make friends. That said, I dig it. Definitely play Remnant. It's super fun.
I really love that the coverage, just for anyone watching on the video, that it came from a Gamescom Now segment. So if you're wondering what our Gamescom coverage was last year, Remnant from, or 2 years ago, Gamescom from, or Remnant from the Ashes. But so yeah, that's the four game lineup. You can also download, as I mentioned, Destruction All-Stars still throughout this month. And then I think they also announced that one will be $20 after the PlayStation Plus timing instead of 70. They updated, which I think is the best case scenario for that game.
Absolutely, especially with its sort of emphasis on paid content. I think that's that makes it a lot easier to swallow.
Yeah, I think that's going to help a lot in the long run, especially with whatever content additions and different modes and whatnot they have planned. But we'll definitely keep an eye on that one. But we were spending a little more time on PlayStation Plus this month than I think we have in the past few months, just because I wanted to one point out. I think this is a really solid lineup. Like, I think this is really great on the whole. I think it's. We've talked a lot about the show in the past, after they got rid of PS3 and Vita games from the lineup, that like two games a month wasn't really cutting it as a reason for spending money on this service. And so, you know, this is not back up to six games, but this is like a well-rounded look of what you can get. Like, it is a PSVR game, two backward compatible PS4 games and a PS5 game. Like, there is enough here for whatever platform you're on, and I hope we see that continue. And really, since the PS5 has launched, I'm gonna say there's been one month that hasn't been great, but the PS5 launched in November and we got Bugsnax, Shadow of War, Hollow Knight. January, we got Maneater, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, and Greedfall. February, we got Control, Concrete Genie, and Destruction All-Stars. We have this month. That's a ton of great games in such a small span, regardless of whether you're on PS4 and PS5. I think December, where it was Worms Rumble, Rocket Arena, and Just Cause 4, is probably the weakest of these months.
I'm still salty that my Maneater PS4 save file didn't carry over to my PS5 while we're calling out.
Yeah.
Minor grievances.
No, that's fair. It's again, the generational leap. There are caveats to some of these things, but in total, I am, because we have been, I think, quick to point out that, like, man, PlayStation Plus wasn't cutting it for a while. I do want to point out that I do think it is. I do think we are in a much better period than we have been, honestly, for the whole last year.
Totally agree.
It feels much more worthy, especially I think when obviously it does not compare whatsoever to Game Pass, but when you do see the other console line being like, hey, subscribe for roughly the same price and you get 100 games every month, at least the games we're getting now seems to be of a like more well thought out caliber and variety month to month. So I'm pretty happy with where PlayStation Plus is for the moment, and I hope it keeps up. Also, just as a reminder for anyone, regardless of whether or not you have PlayStation Plus, you can currently download Ratchet and Clank, the 2016 PS4 game, for free. No strings attached. It's not a temporary ownership. You don't need PS Now or PS Plus. It's just part of the Play at Home initiative that PlayStation did last year and are doing again this year. So if you haven't played Ratchet and Clank before, go redeem it. Even if you're think you might wait till closer to Rift Apart, just go redeem it now, get it while you can. It's free, it's a fantastic game, and definitely worth it.
And chances are, if you live in the world, you want a bright, colorful, fun, joyous action platformer to play right now, because it's a lot better than almost literally everything else, so you need it. That's why they're telling you to play it. There's like, stay home for a few hours and play this game and enjoy and cheer up, because it's good.
And if you don't, we'll be here to tell you about all the Souls likes and Soulsborns you could be playing.
That's right, which helped just as much.
The other major topic, there's been a couple other things that have popped up since we last recorded. One brief thing I'll mention that popped up today. Just curious to hear both of your thoughts. The PlayStation Store, they announced, will no longer be selling movies and TV shows. I have never once purchased or rented a movie or TV show from my PlayStation.
You said that it will no longer be selling movies or TV shows, and my first thought was, it sells movies and TV shows, so I guess my life will not be affected by this.
I'm sure there are users out there who have, like, if you have purchased things, you will still have access to them for now. Like, obviously we'll see where things go in the future. Digital libraries are unfortunately digital libraries, but you'll still have ownership of them on your PS4. They won't disappear, but it's not a shocking announcement to me. It feels a little out of the blue. sort of in the same way that when they canceled PlayStation TV, I think a year ago around this time, they were kind of just like, well, that's the end of that. And the few people who used it were like, that was pretty good. But like, I use Hulu and Amazon and Netflix and HBO. I use all of the entertainment apps on my PlayStation, and I've never once thought I should go directly to the PlayStation store to get these things.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys this. Do you have are you building a digital library anywhere? Like, are there
not
any movies
and TV? No.
Oh, interesting. Because I feel like I've done, like, I ditched physical media for movies and TV a very long time ago, with like rare exceptions for stuff like you can't find, you know, on digitally. But I've like slowly amassed through like Movies Anywhere, just like things I've purchased or redeemed, a small library of like, there were like a bunch of movies like 2 or 3 years ago where I realized my wife and I every single December were renting like the same 5 or 6 Christmas movies that were all like $5 to rent and $10 to own. And I was like, we're going to make an investment here. We're going to make $5 a year off of this. But then there's a couple things that I've just like, I want to be able to watch whenever I want. But I do think, and that's through Movies Anywhere, which like basically I think you would have to expect like 7 or 9 sort of parallel streaming platforms to all pull this move on the same day. And then be like, you don't have this anymore. But this is, once again, like that risk of that all digital future, that even if you were that small group of people buying games exclusively or buying movies and TV exclusively through the PlayStation Store, which I imagine there wasn't like a ton of, but because they pushed that shit pretty heavy on the front of the store. Like when I was there for games, they were like, would you like to buy some TV shows? And I was like, not at all.
I don't need to watch Get Hard with Will.
No, I'm good. Yeah, that was there for so long.
It was really up there for a while. Yeah. I think that's the most I can remember about that movie is that it was on the PlayStation. I've never seen it. But yeah, it was clearly a thing they tried to push and tried to make happen. I mean, like even when PlayStation originally was going to try to make the PlayStation Studios, I forget the exact name at that time, but it was they made that TV show based on Powers, the comic book series. Like they were trying to get into the Originals game like, you know, 6-7 years ago, and we're going to use the PlayStation Store as the outlet for that. Obviously, that experiment didn't work out. They're now just partnering with movies and TV production studios to make stuff for other platforms. So these kind of go hand in hand. But yeah, it's an interesting aspect that it is kind of integral to the store. Like it is a major, it is one of the main options is to go buy these things. I just, it's something I've never used. And so it's death is sad for those I think who use it, but probably will be not much more than an inconvenience for most. Anyway, other than that, the one bigger topic I did want to touch on, that sort of broke over the weekend, or at least in my estimation of the weekend, since I took a longer weekend, was, that, there seemed to have been some somewhat verified potential leaked clips of an Elden Ring trailer. They are, as is tradition, shot off screen on a camera phone from 2007,
bouncing all over the place.
Yeah, it's they are, as predicted for any sort of leak, terribly done. But yeah.
These were done entirely with the Game Boy camera, as always, which is, you know, part of the requirements.
The only way to leak a game. That or the 3DS camera that you had to front face towards yourself to be able to put your face in that one mini game at launch. Anyway, that's, I don't know why my brain went there. Anyway, we have apparently seen some slight, slight teases of it. There were rumors and people suggesting that Elden Ring would appear at a Microsoft event that is supposed to happen in March. Aaron Greenberg from Microsoft went on Twitter and said that this is not happening. But apparently sources speaking with VGC, who we've previously referred to during some of the Silent Hill leaks, mentioned that they've sort of verified the origins of this off-screen footage of gameplay from Elden Ring. It is reportedly being shared in online chat groups, so I assume on like Discord channels or something, and shows
the internet.
Yeah, the internet.
I saw it on the internet.
And it shows, quote, a montage of familiar Souls-style melee combat, boss battles against a fire-breathing dragon and a large sword-wielding foe, and a glimpse at horseback combat in a large open environment.
Jonathan, you made it further into that sentence than I did before I headed to the internet to watch it myself.
Probably the easier way to experience that content. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we won't be showing the leaked footage here as we haven't been able to verify the sources of it and whatnot, but it's obviously out there. We're not going to link to it and everything, but this is one of those weird cases where I feel like Elden Ring is probably the most talked about game that we have seen the least of in recent memory. Like, I cannot think of a game that has dominated more like discussion and wonder and like mystery to it, where we have literally only seen a cinematic trailer. Mm-hmm. Like, that is it.
Like, I think a runner up is like God of War 2, but even that's a known quantity to an extent. Yeah. Like, we know the characters starring that game. We have an idea what the combat and everything's going to feel like. And I think we have, you know, similar concepts with Elden Ring. But this is a game, and we've talked about this on the show, has such a dedicated subreddit that they started basically creating lore and sharing stories of boss battles that they had that don't actually exist. Like, they're so into every little detail about this game. And so, like, I think leaks are bad. I think that, like, pirated leaks are bad, but I did look at this because I'm buying this game on day one no matter what, and I'm tremendously excited for it, and everything in it is cool as hell, and I really love what FromSoft does. I think that they're on a completely different level than pretty much any other gaming company. Like, to be able to get an idea of what this game might play like, and Dorno, you're playing through a bunch of like Soulsborne games now, like, we have a kind of an idea of how this is going, how we interact with this, right? But just seeing the world and like the creatures and monsters and just like the colors that are here now, I will say, like, it's got a vibrancy to it. Again, this is all based on hearsay, and who knows, it's, and this leak or whatever is in there that may or may not be real, but looks pretty official. I can't wait for this game. I can't wait for it.
It it's an interesting one because we don't know exactly the date of origin of this footage, obviously how it was procured. And as Brian was saying, like, leaks are, when they come up in this way, it's a terrible thing. Obviously, this is not the way the developers want the game to be shown off. It's not an actual practical way of seeing the game, even whether it's at like an E3 showing or when we get to actually play the game. Like, this is a very bastardized version of what they probably will want to show eventually. And
it's also like what were you gonna say, Tom?
We weren't able to verify this tweet, but I saw people basically saying that this is a year old internal only trailer that was,
I've seen that going around,
mm-hmm. So like, and that, we haven't been able to verify that that's actually the case, just in the way that we haven't been able to verify the leak itself. But like, if that's true, like, that's especially doubly so that we're not seeing anything sort of representative of whatever rumored soon to come out trailer might be. Is it would potentially look entirely different, right?
Yeah, there's no telling what has changed since that footage was put together, whether, as you were saying, we haven't verified, but whether it was intended just internally, whether some of it may have meant to be, see the light of day, what state the game was in, if and when it was taken from the actual game. There are so many ifs and buts about it. But I did want to bring it up, though, because I do think it points to just like the pure fervor that exists for this game right now. Feels like such a fever pitch, like the shortest snippets.
It's not only the shortest snippets, but also like, it's one of the few games where like the hype around it is so potent, and like, I feel like people can feel the danger of it a little bit, the hype, because I don't remember many other games that when rumors or potential sort of murmurings of like it might be shown here show up, you have developers from other companies and developers internally and all this stuff just be straight up like the same day tweeting like, no, that's not happening, this is like, stop it, because like nobody wants it to escalate, right? Like, yeah, nobody,
right.
Microsoft is so knows that the backlash to there being rumors at a Microsoft of Elden Ring at a Microsoft event that then don't come to fruition, that they're like, we're not even letting that start. Like, we're nipping the bud as early as we possibly can. And I don't think that has happened for many games that like have that much excitement.
No. And with this specifically, I would say that like, if this is a year old footage, that's part of the reason why they didn't just officially unveil it today. or yesterday. Like when the leak came out, like there were some companies that, you know, the Series S got leaked, and at 3 a.m. Microsoft was like, you caught us, here it is. You know, I think that happens here and there. Like stuff gets leaked and people own up to it. FromSoft didn't go, hey, here's the 4K version of that thing that was ripped off of that potato phone back there. Because they know that that's year old footage. And maybe they know that if they had shown it a year ago, a lot of people would have said, you know, this is what I expect the game to look and play and be like. And when the game does finally come out, it's different. And there's backlash to that. Like, I think that, like, that conversation has changed a lot over the last few years. And it's really important to let the audience know what they're going into and what they're actually purchasing. Because if you show them something too early, and what happens so often in game design is that ideas get cut and mechanics get cut and things get, you know, kind of pared down and shrunk a little bit. And most of that is shielded from the audience for good reason, because it's, you know, it's the whittling part of the artistic process that I don't think they necessarily need to see as consumers, because they end up thinking that this is what I have to buy or this is what I am buying. And so I think when they show this game, it's going to be pretty damn close to being here. And that's awesome.
Yeah, I think at this point they are definitely waiting for the, like, when they can see the light at the end of the tunnels sort of situation here, because at this point they know how popular and how anticipated it is. Like, I think Bandai Namco is the publisher. They could easily probably rush and push FromSoft to just make a trailer to put out. Like, they could they could push them to do that, but obviously they want to wait to show what they really intend to show. And yeah, it is fascinating, as you were saying. Like, I don't know a game that could quite command this level of hype, except for maybe before launch Cyberpunk, probably to a certain extent. Yeah. But like, exactly. Yeah. Right now, this is sort of the thing that all eyes are on. And I think it's smart of them not to just be putting out, you know, tons of gameplay snippets, tons of cinematic trailers. Like, they really want to wait to make a big splash with whatever they're going to show. And I would imagine it probably will be pretty close, because, like, FromSoft hasn't really missed.
No.
You know, since this the Soulsborne genre has taken off so much. Like, obviously Dark Souls 2 is not looked at as fondly, but that wasn't a Miyazaki directed game. It still is a pretty well respected game. It just isn't the favorite of the three. Like, they've been on this great trajectory. They're partnered with George R. R. Martin for this game. Like, it,
well, and that, I think that's a detriment to the conversation personally. Yeah. Because that turns it into this running joke of, like, maybe it will never come out, you know. Like, there is that side of it too.
Yeah, it is funny that, of course, like, the game everyone's waiting to see the most of, and it, again, it's worth reminding people, I've seen it going around, Elden Ring wasn't revealed that long ago. It's been less than 2 years. Strange as it feels, like, it's been much longer, because this past year has been a decade. But the game itself has only been, like, known in this capacity for so long. And so it is this curious fever pitch that we're at. And I fully expect we'll see something from that game this year. It's just.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, we're just like a few months away from, you know, event shaped season or whatever that looks like this year. I think that there's obviously going to be a bunch of months from late spring to early summer where, like, announcements really start popping off, even if there aren't 40,000 people in a convention center to hear them. That feels right. And there are journalists in the industry that are saying that we might see it even sooner than that. We might even see it this week. So who knows? Fingers crossed. Maybe we did another one of those really early beyonds and it just turns out some cool shit came out afterwards.
I was going to say, there's definitely going to be a trailer tomorrow at this point. So you're welcome, internet. Beyond, once again, helping everyone out.
We did it.
Moving on from that, though, I did want to talk a little bit about what we've been playing. I know the show just recorded a little recently, but Tom, it's been a while since you've been on, and it was the weekend, so perhaps we got up to things. Tom, were you playing anything else besides Maquette over the weekend that you want to shout out? Or has it been a bit
different? It's been like a weird one. Maquette only took me, an evening to beat. So I played that, but I didn't play a ton of that. Here, one weird thing is I restarted Hollow Knight on PS5 because I had it on PS5. And I was like, hey, that's one of the five platforms that I haven't played it on yet. So I might as well replay it on that. Here's a weird thing I will say. I had to stop playing it because I was spraining my right pinky and ring finger. And I don't know what it is, but something between the combination of the PS5 controller and that game was making me hold my hand in a position that was just like hurting just these fingers. And I don't know why. So I'm and I say this mostly because I'm really curious if anybody else has gone through this with the transition to the with the new DualSense, because I love it as a controller. I generally like the shape of it, but like apparently it's just slightly different enough that when I need to use, like, I guess it's because you press the X button to jump while dashing with the trigger a lot in that game. So I think it might be some combination of that just makes me hold in a weird way. That screws me up. So I'm curious to know if anybody else got that feeling with it. But like, I had to take a break. I had to actively take a break because it was hurting my hand too much. Specifically, that game on with that controller only.
That's
interesting. Can you remap?
I don't know, actually, in Hollow Knight. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you can from the system itself, but yeah, I don't know if it's in Hollow Knight. I've been meaning to go into Hollow Knight recently, so I'll actually probably try that out in the next couple days and let you know if I feel anything similarly. I would say I haven't had like specific, like I can point to a finger or two that has hurt, but I definitely feel like there have been games that maybe use the rumble a little too much sometimes. And I have definitely felt occasionally like my hands afterward were tired after playing. Yeah. Like that has happened a couple more times, more noticeably recently than on the DualShock 4.
I'm realizing I don't think I've played a lot of sort of like twitchy hardcore 2D platforming stuff on PS5 yet. Like I played Cyber Shadow, but I mostly did that on my Series X, and I played a bit on Switch. And there are definitely moments in that game where I was just like, okay, this is. Maybe I'm just, my hands are getting old, which is true. Maybe that's for sure. It.
Maybe I turned 30 and now I just like, I'm broken.
Hand health is down the toilet. Yeah.
Yep. Hand health is down the toilet. It's such a bad sentence.
I'm still so groggy from the weekend, guys. I'm going to be real with you. No, my brain is being weird. Anyway. So Hollow Knight, you picked back up anything else?
Yeah. I've been playing a lot of Magic the Gathering. I dipped back into Celeste a little bit too, going back to the greatest hits of recent platformers that I love. Nice. But you know, it's that's about it.
Yeah. Brian, what about you? Anything you played over the weekend you want to give a shout out or?
I teased a little bit about this last week, but I'm super into Yakuza Zero. Like it finally clicked. I finally pushed past that first few hours and I love it. It's exactly what everyone described it to me as, and it's exactly what everyone told me I would love about it for years, as I stubbornly ignored them and played other things. Like it's and here I am doing my sort of like apology tour. I'm like texting a bunch of friends being like, the game's great, it took me forever, I'm really sorry, I know you told me about this for a long time. Especially, well, you, Max. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say, I'm so happy you're doing this the week Max is gone. You know, just
I know.
Stick at home.
And then when he gets back, you can pretend like it never happened. It's never.
I'll just be like, yeah, never heard of it. Yakuza.
No,
I never touched it.
No, I got real into Kingdom Hearts. That's what.
But yeah, so it's. No, go for it.
I was just gonna ask you started because I've been contemplating jumping in finally, but I think I'm really torn between starting with Zero or going to Like a Dragon, because they both seem like different. Good entry points, but for very different reasons. Like you're happy starting with Zero, you feel like?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm very happy, and obviously I believe there's been a lot of debate about where to start. But I'm starting here. It seemed like the needle shifted slightly to start with Zero in the fan base, so I went with that direction. And I really like it for a lot of reasons. One, I feel like I'm not in the headspace right now for like another massive open world game. And this isn't that. Like this is smaller, more contained environments. Two, I haven't traveled outside of, you know, California in almost a year. And I used to host a travel show. I used to go on airplanes constantly. I love not being, you know, in one spot for too long. And this has given me that itch of being in a place that I love. Like I love going to Japan, and it's super cool to just like walk around some small quaint streets that have a lot of like the weird, which are not weird to them, but funny and strange to us, little things like capsule toy machines on the street. And, you know, like just really fun signage everywhere. There's like vending machines where you can go up and buy a bunch of snacks. And from what I can tell, like, I don't know if they have any significant impact on your physical or mental health in any real prolonged capacity, but sometimes it's fun to just like sit down and order yakitori and just eat it and then walk outside and be like, oh yeah, I could do that in a game. Like, it's just, it's kind of low key, like slow paced travel meets RPG River City Ransom. Cause like when you're not doing all that nonsense, you're just punching dudes in the face on the street. That's a great time. It's super fun. It's exactly what I'm looking for right now. It's like, it's chill. It's challenging enough. It's got a really interesting, fun story that I'm like finding very endearing. I'm so glad I'm playing this game now. Cause it's one of those things where I'm like, it's like watching, you know, the first Fast and the Furious movie for the first time. And somebody's like, they made 11 more of these. And like, they might go to space. You're like, whoa, this is great. What a door to open, you know?
Yeah.
So I have this whole new franchise now to play with. So I'm hyped.
That's awesome. I've seen a lot of like Yakuza love, I think, over Twitter in the last month or two of people either like longtime fans happy with like a dragon or people coming new to it like you. And yeah, it's definitely gotten me in the thought of like, okay, maybe I should finally, you know, listen to Max and jump in at this point, because as you were sort of saying, it feels like a fun escape in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. which is definitely not a bad thing these days.
Yeah,
this is not at all a helpful recommendation, I think, for Brian, but I had a very similar reaction when I played through Persona 5 Strikers, because like that, you could tell me that game was partially funded by like the Japanese tourism board and I would believe you, because they go to all these different cities, and every time they go to a city, they like always camp next to like a like landmark or like a tourist spot, and then they'll like tell you about that tourist spot, and then they'll tell you like what that city's local cuisine is famous for, and like you go to one of those restaurants and eat it, and you're like, wow, this is so good. And it's like, it felt like a little bit of like digital tourism while playing that game, and mm-hmm. I agree, that was valuable, man. That felt nice.
I feel like we should make a video that's sort of just like top 10 real places to visit in video games based on real life. Better headline, we'll workshop. But just to
we'll
sort of
talk
be like
to you, Lucy off air.
Yeah. Lucy will turn that into not word garbage. Just sort of be like, hey, if you really want to go to Paris, like this is your game. If you really want to go to Italy, this is your game. They're all Assassin's Creed games. No, I think that'd be really fun. Like, this just sort of be like, here's how video games handle real places that we can't visit right now, you know?
Yeah, it is a nice, I totally, you know, not having played Yakuza, but Tom speaking to Persona, I absolutely felt the same way. And it's very, there's something very pleasant about it, where it is coming from like, you're right, it almost feels like they're advertising, but it comes from such like a good natured, happy place that I'm like, oh yeah, this does seem lovely. I'd probably really enjoy this in real life if I could. But speaking of visiting places, I definitely will never go. I did start Sekiro over the weekend. After bouncing on that game super hard, and Red is showing my footage because I'm live streaming. And wow. I spent most of the first day fighting this goddamn unchained ogre. This Red, you're gonna have to bleep me for the first time, but this guy, my god, it's probably the angriest I've gotten in a game in a long time, but I had to persevere. There's one point where he can grab you, this first ogre, like he can grab you and then toss you over his head. He grabbed me and tossed me over the side of the cliff. And mm-hmm. I still could have, like, I could have resurrected if he had just, like, ground pounded me. It would have been fine. But he was just like, no, you have no chance right now. And this
I cheesed the hell out of this dude. No, I have no. Yeah,
no, they regrets. apparently patched one of the main cheesing methods, because as I was playing, people in the chat were telling me like, oh, go do this way. And they're like, oh, you can't do that anymore because he knows.
Oh.
And so I couldn't, like, sneak around him to be able to get a good hit in. So it was really tough, but like coming from, I ended up jumping into this for some backstory because the people watching me, we fundraised and were hitting a certain goal for a charity. And so I jumped from Dark Souls 1 to Sekiro, and that's a very different jump to go from the first Dark Souls to this. But I am glad I'm back in it, because I bounced off it when it first came out because I had zero Souls experience. And this one, I feel like even though it plays very differently, having that at least like idea in my head of how to play these games and the punishment I will go through early on, I think is helping me a lot in this case. And the fluidity of it, the fact that there is jumping, like there is a bit more of mobility that you just don't get in other Souls games. I really like it. Like, it doesn't make me want to stop playing the other Souls games. Like, I do want to go back to the Dark Souls games and Bloodborne, of course, and everything. But having a game where you are jumping around and you can run away and I'm not worrying about a stamina bar is a very different freeing experience, but a challenge in its own right that I'm really digging so far. I really liked it a lot.
Incredibly well said.
And here's me exercising because one of the rewards.
You're wearing the same hoodie now, so that screwed me up. I thought you were just like getting up and leaving.
I gotta go. You're glitching.
He's gonna start T-posing. No, I'm totally with you. We were laughing about getting our asses kicked by that ogre. That ogre, like we were talking about before, is like you haven't necessarily learned the game language by that point, and eventually you're like, oh crap. It's a rhythm game. Like, I totally didn't realize, like, you can't just button mash your way through this. And it's weird to be like, I'm a ninja or I'm a samurai. I'm this fast paced, you know, like unstoppable force. And this guy's like, well, I'm a drunk ogre that lives on a stairwell and I have like pieces of wood stuck in my face. Want to fight? And you're just like, well, I don't know how to be like slick about this. But yeah, you get much better at the game and everything starts clicking more much. Yeah, obviously it already has happened for you, but yeah, I really want to revisit this game now, man.
It was that really fun moment because it's totally that thing where someone in my chat as I was playing live was saying it really well because they had played it of like, the game does a really great, like pulling the carpet out from underneath you because it starts as a power fantasy. Like in the beginning, in the first couple like small enemies you're fighting, they're pretty easy. Like as the beginning of a Souls games go, it's probably the easiest start to a Souls game that I've had. Because you feel powerful when you're doing it. Like the attacks hit really hard. The blocks feel really satisfying. Like everything about it is this really great power fantasy. And then you just get to this ogre and you're like, what am I doing with my life? And it really forces you. It is that the crappy like get good moment, but it does really force you to understand the game in a level that you didn't have to just yet. And I think will probably benefit me in the long run to have had this encounter. But yeah, I really enjoy that. And then also wanted to give out too, I started a game called Curse of the Dead Gods, which is on PS4. And I've been using it as Brian, you talked about on the show a few weeks ago, and then you talking about it convinced Greg Miller to buy it, and then Greg convinced Barrett, our old producer, to buy it, and then he convinced me to buy the Backbone, not a sponsor of the show, but they it's a controller that you can essentially use for your phone. I know you were using it and been on it, and it's really great for a game like this, which is filling a somewhat Hades sized hole in my heart. It definitely doesn't have the reliance on story that Hades does and doesn't have necessarily that loop to it, but it's a really satisfying roguelike experience that I like the push and pull of essentially risk and reward that comes with it, because essentially you are consistently getting more and more cursed as you go on, and so you're having to fight against these negative impacts on your game as you are trying to get through these, you know, randomized rooms and go through runs. I'm really enjoying that push and pull. I'm loving it a lot, but you've started it too, Brian.
Yeah. It's tough. It's definitely a tough game. And I dig that about it. I'm really impressed with sort of how quick the movement is when you really get down to it. Like there's an interesting sort of dance between your projectile stuff, your blunt object stuff, and then your dash. And there's also like a timing mechanic for when an enemy basically lunges at you or throws a projectile, which gives it this like awesome, very brief bullet timey sequence where you're kind of dashing through people. And when you start linking a bunch of stuff like that in a row, it's awesome. Like there's this really crazy sort of ping pong effect happening around the room. And then you miss one or two and you start getting beat up and you're like, all right, I got to build that back up again. But yeah, I like this game a lot. I'm a couple hours in and it's definitely tough as hell.
It's
but really brutal. I'm going to keep pushing.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, this game is really cool too, to me, because it feels like it borrows a lot of ideas from other places, but without feeling just outright derivative, right? Like, I think a lot of the times a game can either get caught in just like, oh, I'm just going to be this, but this, right? Hades, but X. And it like feels like its own thing, but it does also have like so many recognizable components. Like combat kind of reminds me a lot of Hades, right? And then it's got the Slay the Spire sort of map decision choices, and then it's got Dead Cells as weapon and attribute systems, and then it's got Darkest Dungeons kind of light and corruption mechanics, and it's like all of these things that are so recognizable from other places, but in a hole that doesn't just feel like it's copying any one of them. It feels very much like its own thing. And that's like a, it's a hard line to walk. And I think it walked it very well.
Totally. Yeah. It's a, thank you for mentioning the Dark Souls thing. Cause I was trying to, I know the attribute system in here is from somewhere, but I couldn't place it. And it totally
the attribute system is straight up Dead Cells. Yeah.
Yeah. And like you say, it definitely feels like the, there is a hodgepodge of ideas you have seen before, but it never feels like it is just a carbon copy. Like it, there, right. there is something about the melding of all of them. And I think both the aesthetic and the light and dark mechanic in there and the way it's used with these characters, the creature design that you're fighting is really cool. I really dig it. And definitely if you are in the mood for a roguelike, especially a new one, this don't sleep on this one because it came out just a couple weeks ago and I haven't heard too much about it. But Mitchell
gave it a 9.
His review was what convinced me. And I totally recommend it if you have enjoyed Hades. But don't have it on PS4 yet. Come on, Supergiant. Just bring it over. Anyway, before we wrap up, did want to read one memory card story. Memory card, of course, is our weekly segment where you, the viewers and listeners at home, write in with your favorite happy, sad, weird, wacky, whatever memory, PlayStation or gaming life, and we read them on the show. This one, you may remember a couple of weeks ago, I had called out for, I could not find the story for the life of me in my email and wanted to read it. It was vaguely a follow-up to another story that we had gotten in, kind of about this was one where someone was not able to get Tomb Raider to play on their PC, and they went back and their parent basically fought with the store clerks that their son knew how to use a computer and it wasn't their fault and it must have not been their problem. And then of course it turned out their PC didn't have a disk drive in it, and they kept that secret with them to that day. Anyway, this is sort of another awkward situation in a retail store, but it has quite the twist. So anyway, Ed wrote into beyond@IGN.com and said, my dad got us a PlayStation 2 around a year after they came out. A few months later, we got the dreaded disc read error. A PS2 was a pretty big purchase in my family, so needless to say, my dad was angry, first at us, asking us what, until we convinced him the console failed on its own. He's always been that kind of guy to fix everything himself instead of taking it to the shop. So my dad broke the warranty to try to fix it, but no luck. Frustrated, my dad decided to try and return it to the store for a different one, and as a punishment, took me with him. I didn't know it at the time, but my dad bought the console at a Walmart, which was only a 5 to 7 minute drive down the road from the Kmart he decided to go to. We go up to the counter and there's this young woman there. My dad politely asks for an exchange. My dad didn't have a receipt, so the cashier tries her best to find the information through scanning all the barcodes. It takes a long 10 minutes for her to tell my dad there was nothing in the computer about it. My dad used to have a short fuse back in the day, so he got agitated pretty quickly and asked her to check again and again, each time getting angrier. The woman gets frustrated and seemed to be on the verge of tears, so she calls in the manager. The manager comes to the counter and hears my dad, who's making a scene at this point. I'm standing there embarrassed, but I really wanted my PS2 back, so I kept my mouth shut as my dad explains that the console broke and that he bought it here for Christmas the year before, and the manager gets confused. He tells my dad that they didn't have any PS2s in stock until after the new year. My dad doesn't relent no matter how many times the manager says to him the possible way he could have bought a PS2 from that store, but he sticks to the story. The manager takes the console, opens it, sees the warranty sticker is broken, yet my dad stood his ground. It may have lasted for all of 20 minutes, but I felt like I was there for over an hour before the manager just became exhausted and relented. They took our console and gave us a brand spanking new PS2. I was stunned. My dad drove silently and told me that he would never, ever do that again or take care of the PS2. I thought the story ended there, but there's an epilogue.
Uh-oh.
Years later, my youngest brother gets his first serious girlfriend. We invite her and my mom to come to a family gathering. And when the mother, her and her mom, and when the mother arrives, her jaw drops as she meets my dad. She gets this look like she's seen a ghost. My brother's girlfriend's mom was the lady my dad was yelling at the day at the Kmart all the way back originally. It was really awkward at first, and she said that it was one of the worst days of her entire life. But my dad apologized and explained the whole thing. By the end of the night, they buried the hatchet. The fact that came back at the end to haunt a Christmas or a holiday years later is just incredible to me.
Complete side note, but he said he got the disc read error. I just remembered that my friends and I used to call that Dr. Dre.
Specifically that error.
No, like the DRE.
Oh, okay.
The discrete. Goddamn.
That's really good. Anyway, Ed, thank you so much for writing in with that wild memory card story. If you want to write in with the story, you can at icon.com with the subject line memory card each week on the show. Before we wrap up, though, just also briefly wanted to mention, before we leave, any plugs that you want to share, Tom? I know you obviously published the Maquette review recently, so people should go check that out if they haven't. Anything else you want to plug recently, or has it been, you know, a busy time?
Nah, it's been I'll plug not being on Twitter. That's what I'm plugging.
It's a good plug.
That's my plug.
That's a good idea. That's a bad game that we all play.
That's a really insensitive plug right now when like half the country is under ice. I don't know. Do what you love. That's my plug. I'm floundering. Move on.
Brian, anything you want to plug?
No, not yet. I feel like everything I'm working on either happened already or isn't happening yet. And I can't. So no, not yet. But I don't know. Go watch more horror movies. They're good.
Yeah. And I will plug, as I mentioned it last week, please go check out my Bugsnax deep dive. I love that. It just killed Tom. Please go check out my Bugsnax deep dive about the ending if you haven't read that, but have beaten Bugsnax. Definitely go check that out. And then I also did previews for Returnal, which I got to speak with the Housemarque team a little bit about, and Stonefly, which is this really cool looking indie game from the developers of Creature in the Well. Please go check those out if you haven't seen them already. And then, yeah, outside of that stuff, just also briefly wanted to mention, I watched Nomadland this weekend, and it was wonderful. Ooh. It was so good. And Chloe Zhao, who directed it, is directing Eternals, which is so awesome and such a jump. But man, I can't wait for that movie, especially after watching. Like, I trust in her as a director so much. I can't wait to see what she does with that movie.
There was that like WandaVision quote about grief going around over the weekend, and a lot of people were like making fun of it, and a lot of people were saying this is the best line ever, and there was a part of me being just like, if you think this is powerful, there's a movie that handles grief better than pretty much any movie I've seen in a very long time, and it's on Hulu right now, and it's called Nomadland, and it just won a Golden Globe. Watch that shit.
Nomadland is really fantastic, and I urge you to watch it if you but yeah, that's gonna pretty much wrap us up for this week's episode of Beyond. Thank you, everyone out there, so much for watching and listening. Thank you, Brian and Tom, for joining me this weekend, or this week. It's not the weekend anymore.
It's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday. And thank you so much, as always, to Red, our producer, for helping to make the show happen, even when I forget what day of the week it is. So thank you so much for being here. And as always, Beyond.
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 Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.